We are, what chapter are we in?
Nine.
Is it nine?
You read nine, 10, and 11.
Nine, 10, and 11. Okay, so next week, what we're gonna do is look at 12, 13, and 14. And that will finish up our book of Zechariah. Okay, and then we'll go in and we'll spend a weekend in Malachi, taking a look at that, and that will finish up our lessons. I don't know what the elders have in mind after that, but I have to see at that particular time. Okay, chapter nine. Did I say Habakkuk? I meant Haggai. Sorry about that, that's what I meant, Haggai. Not Habakkuk. Okay, this chapter nine first starts out with God's declaration of punishment against some of the lands and some of the cities surrounding Israel or Judah. Zechariah mentions a number of cities during this time, such as Damascus, Tyre, Sidon, Gaza. And these were the lands of the Philistines, and a little bit further north, the land of the Assyrians, or Canaanite people, to the west and the north of Judah. Well, we know about Gaza, we know where that's at, don't we?
Yeah, it's the same Gaza as now, that's what I was wondering.
Same area, yeah, although I think the Gaza back in the Bible time, during this period of time, was quite a, the land that they claimed was quite a bit bigger. But what about Tyre? Yeah, we know about Tyre. That was around during the days of Christ. City of Tyre. What do we know about the city of Tyre?
Tyre and Sidon produced a whole bunch of material for the temple, and it came down, and they sent a lot of craftsmen too.
That was back during the time of David. Yes, David and Solomon, right. Yeah, they provided a lot of building material, cedars of Lebanon and so forth like that. Thousands and thousands and thousands of laborers that went into that. I think they had like 30,000 timber fallers, guys that worked in it. You can imagine that, how much lumber that took. And these cedars are not little trees. So they had 30,000 timber fallers back in those days, and they were hauling them down, rafting them down the seacoast. And kind of interesting back in the days of Solomon. Kind of gives you a little skimpy view of just how magnificent the temple was. But what about Tyre? Who did? You know, Nebuchadnezzar went down there, and he defeated the city of Tyre that was on the land. But he couldn't defeat the city that was out on the peninsula, or out on the island out there. Who managed to destroy that? Anybody know?
Alexander the Great.
Yeah, Alexander came along. And this is not too far down the road, remember? God telling them that he's going to punish Tyre, and this is not too far down the road, maybe 100 years, if that. And Alexander is going to come by, and he's going to destroy. He was pretty smart. He took the ruins of the old city that was on the peninsula, and he built a causeway out to the island. And that's how he defeated and destroyed the city of Tyre. And the prophets predicted that, didn't they? So it was kind of interesting. Okay. In verse 7 of chapter 9, Zechariah mentions that God will make the people of Ekron, part of his people, like the Jebusites. What's he talking about there?
It says that Jebusites were the old inhabitants of Jebus, the stronghold that became Jerusalem. That's what my sideline says.
Okay, well.
Is he comparing him to like the Jews and the Gentiles at some point? Like,
well, if you'll remember, Melchizedek was the king of Salem, which was what Jerusalem was called way back in the time of Abraham. But it was populated by the Jebusites. And at that particular time, it was called Jebu, or J-E-B-U, after the Jebusites. But it was a city of Jerusalem. And what happened to the Jebusites? Anybody remember those Old Testament days? Remember the Jebusites, when the children of Israel came into the land of Canaan, they were not able to defeat the Jebusites. And so they made a pact with them. And the Jebusites, over a period of years, just got absorbed by the Jews until King David came along. And then King David defeated the Jebusites and took the city of Jerusalem, and thereby made it his capital. But they just got absorbed into the population. And this is what they're saying here in Zechariah, is saying to the people of Ekron. And down on verse or two, they're going to see that they just are becoming part of Judah. And that's what he's referring to. Kind of interesting, because Ekron, about 200 years before this, was defeated by Nebuchadnezzar, and it was never rebuilt, but the people were still there. And so they got absorbed like the Jebusites, became part of the country of Judah. This chapter then turns to the coming of the king. Who is this talking about?
Christ.
Yeah, talking about Christ, isn't it? Verse 9 is a prophecy of the coming of Jesus into Jerusalem, riding a donkey. And anybody know where we find that account? He's talking about Jesus riding into Jerusalem on a donkey, is that right?
In Matthew 24.
Matthew 21.
It's actually Matthew, Mark, 20, and John.
21:5 and John 12:15.
Yeah, and I've forgotten, I think it's Matthew 18, isn't it?
I believe that's right.
And Matthew 21,
but it could be Matthew
18. Yeah, it's in, but anyway, it talks about Jesus, prophesying Jesus coming in Jerusalem. When did that happen? Anybody relate that?
Right before he was killed.
Okay, it was on a
Friday.
On a Friday?
Friday.
What did they do? Did they welcome him?
Yeah.
Did the people of Jerusalem welcome Jesus into town?
What was that?
They thought he was going to be the king.
Yeah, they were thinking he was going to be king, wasn't it?
An earthquake.
Yeah, and you know Zechariah. Kind of interesting, because the Calvinists like to refer to this book as a prophecy of the earthly kingdom that Jesus is going to establish in Jerusalem as going to be the head city. What did Jesus say about that? Anybody?
my kingdom is not of this world.
Yeah, my kingdom is not of this world. Who did you tell that to?
Pilate
asked him, he says, are you the king of the Jews? Are you the king? Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. In other words, it's not political. It's not paid for. It is paid for, but a little bit different than what Pilate thought. But my kingdom is not of this world. What did Pilate think about that?
Didn't understand.
Did he find fault with Jesus?
Right.
No. So what are the people doing now that he's in front of Pilate? What are the people screaming and hollering about?
They wanted Barabbas.
Yeah, they wanted Barabbas. They wanted Jesus to be crucified, and what, just a few days before? Came riding in on a donkey with palm fronds thrown in front of him. And what did the donkey, do you have an idea of what the donkey represented?
You know, the king always rode on a donkey.
Well, it, you're right, it showed humility and not a war horse that somebody might ride upon, but humility certainly is. Okay.
Well, verse 10 says, I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem, and the bow of war will be cut off, and he will speak peace to the nations, and his dominion will be from sea to sea, from the river to the ends of the earth. So he's saying that he's not coming as a conquering king. He's bringing peace.
Yeah. Anybody else have a comment so far? Anybody on Zoom? Okay. All right, let's go on to chapter 10. Okay, in this chapter, God's encouraging the Israelites to rely on him rather than idols for help and guidance. And God is promising to gather them together from all parts of the world. Of course, we know that they've been scattered forever. And he's promised to give them strength and make them a powerful people, able to overcome their enemies. What is he talking about there, you think? How is God going to make them a powerful people? How is he going to give them strength?
Well, he was going to shepherd them so that he was as part of their flock and bring them all together.
He's going to send a king to them, isn't he? That's going to shepherd them and guide them and give them strength, make them a powerful people. Yeah.
But every nation, not just, I think that's kind of the point too, is that it's going to be every nation, not just the nations.
That's
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So.
But he's talking here, I think he's speaking about the scattered Israelites, the scattered Jews. Okay, so it really emphasizes the importance of looking for God's direction in all aspects of our lives as well. It's pointing to us here, isn't it? And how he will protect us up as his people, and how he's our true shepherd. Anybody have any comments?
I think verse 6 and 10 kind of say, I shall strengthen the house of Judah, and I shall save the house of Joseph, and I shall bring them back because I have compassion on them, and they will be as though I had not rejected them.
For I am the Lord their God, and I will answer them. I think he's just referring to that you have to put in the work. Because they keep asking, well, when's he coming? When's he coming? And he's like, well, he might not come if you guys keep doing what you're doing. And so he wants them to, he's trying to tell them that, you know, if you follow his word now and start doing what he's wanting to do, this is what will happen.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments?
I like verse 12, and I shall strengthen them in the Lord, and in his name they will walk, declares the Lord. So they're strengthened because we're strengthened because we walk in his name.
In verse 6, he mentions the people of Joseph. Now, of course, we know that Christ came through the tribe of who?
David.
Judah. He also mentions Joseph here and the people of Ephraim. What connection does, who is he speaking about here? Joseph and Ephraim? Who was the youngest son of Joseph? Ephraim. Yeah. Remember Manasseh was the firstborn of Joseph. Ephraim was the second. But Ephraim also, the tribe of Ephraim, also was the only one that sided with Judah when the tribes split up. 10 went north, 2 stayed in the south, Judah and Ephraim. And basically Ephraim just became part of Judah. And this is why he is mentioning Joseph and Ephraim. I thought that was kind of interesting. Okay, anything else on chapter 10? Okay, let's look at chapter 11. This one is, to me, is a confusing chapter. And I've read it 2 or 3 times, and I got ideas and thoughts that popped up every time I read it was different. Anybody have any general comments about chapter 11? Now let's take a look at it. Chapter 11, verse 1. Lebanon, open your gates, so fire may burn your cedar trees. Cry, pine trees, because the cedars fallen, the tall trees are ruined. Cry, oaks in Bashan, because the mighty forest has been cut down. Listen to the shepherds crying. Their rich pastures are destroyed. Listen to the lions roaring. The thick bushes near the Jordan River are ruined. I think here is a description of the eventual destruction of the Jewish nation. I think that this cedar, open the gates, the cedar, Lebanon's are going to burn, Lebanon is going to burn. I think that's referring to the temple. Of course, that's where the cedar came from. But I think that that's what it is expressing here. But I think that verse 1 through 3 refers to the destruction of the Jewish nation. Let's take a look at 4 through 6. This is what the Lord my God says. Feed the sheep that are about to be killed. Their buyers kill them and are not punished. Those who sell them say, praise the Lord, I'm rich. Even the shepherds don't feel sorry for their sheep. Even I don't feel sorry. anymore, for the people of this country, says the Lord, I will let everyone be under the power of his neighbor and king. They will bring trouble to the country, and I will not stop them. I think this is where it talks about Jesus being put in control, in charge of the flock. In verse 7 and 8, I think he bears the rule of that flock. And then in verses 9 through 14 and 15 and 17, Jesus turns them over into the hands of foolish shepherds who basically complete their ruin. And both the blind leaders and their followers will fall into the ditch. And that's really what I got out of chapter 11, just briefly. But it's an interesting study, and I think we need to take a look at this again next week and just kind of delve into it a little bit more. Yeah.
12 and 13 mentions 30 shekels of silver as my wages. Mm-hmm. And then 13 refers, so I took the 30 shekels of silver and threw them to the potter in the house of the Lord. Is that referring to Judas Iscariot?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't. I think it's referring to, I think Zephaniah feels that that's about what he's worth, just nothing but 30 pieces of silver. I think it's a coincidence that it's what Judas got paid, but potter's field, that's where all the broken pottery got thrown and just wasted stuff that got broken. It's thrown into a field. Yeah, Bill?
Oh, okay. Laying in a bed.
But isn't a potter's field also refer to people who don't have a name and just were buried there and just be buried there?
Well, yeah, that was a poor man's burial ground, yeah.
Because didn't Judas get thrown into the potter's field after he hung himself from that?
I don't think he was done. I think the money was thrown, was spent in the potter's field by the Sanhedrin, but he went off and hung himself. Wasn't in a potter's field, but he hung himself and hung there forever. Nobody cut him down. But let's look at this. We'll look at this more in detail next week. We'll start out with chapter 11, take a more detailed look at it. And I'd like you to study a little bit and come up with some ideas, what you think it means. And then we'll just add it to our last three, 12, 13, and 14 for next week, okay? But I kept looking at that, and I went through and I read it, and then I studied a little bit, and I went through and read it again. I came up with something else. And so I think it's a little confusing, but.
If you were talking about him feeling like he wasn't worth anything, the 30 pieces of silver was the cost of a slave, right?
The price of a slave.
So if you're not worth any more than the cost of a slave, that would go with what you were saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Zechariah never thought he was worth much to begin with, but he had lots of visions, and they were interesting to study, but I don't know. This chapter 11 is a little confusing with me. So I'll delve into it a little bit deeper next week. We'll take a look at it, and I'd love to have you look at this, and we'll talk about it briefly, what you think it is. I don't have anything more for tonight.